we'll record this.
Acing the wet layup and just jump right into the pre-pregs.
The problem with pre-preg right now for me, obviously, is it's expensive. It's got the fussiness of the shelf life and all that sort of thing. And basically just cost, and I don't know what I'm doing. And I figure with wet layup, I can make stuff. I can make mistakes. I don't know. It's like I don't know enough to buy the right stuff yet.
I just get like 150 GSM prepreg from like Rockwest. It's $50 a pound. Stick it in your, store it in your freezer. You know, I mean, and make yourself a little oven. Like when I started making carbon bikes, I just built a insulated box and I went and got an oven for $15 from the, you know, the out of the back of a appliance repair shop. It's just right. Pulled the element out, stuck it in.
You stacked bricks.
Bikes out of it. And because you only need it to be 200 and, you know, 50 to 300 degrees.
Yeah, I read 180 for 3 hours or something.
1 AC.
Yeah. Oh, okay. Yeah. That was my mistake.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I'm getting there. I'm doing some research at the show. I think there's going to be a lot of 3D. I figure there's going to be some 3D printed Thai contractors here.
Yeah.
That probably have their engineering out of the way, so it makes it easy.
I got an email from someone that's
good morning.
Sending emails to everybody trying to drum up business.
I'm looking for that. What I'm looking for is I want to do some real trail suspension, enduro type bikes. And the only way for me to really do it the way I want is by going to carbon. And what I want to do is I want to mix the best of the technologies. Machined aluminum, carbon fiber layups, 3D printed tie, and figure out a way to get Use the technologies well. Mix them up around the bike.
Yeah, don't do black titanium. You want to do, or black metal. You want to, like, each material has its appropriate place on the bike.
Correct.
And use the right material and don't use the wrong material for the sake of just using the wrong material. Like, for example, on our carbon fiber bike that we're doing for Pursuit, we've got tie inserts in the laminate, so where you screw down the axle, it's not screwing down on carbon. It's screwing down on titanium.
Right,
we didn't
right.
use aluminum.
Really nice. Like the old Calfees were always like really nice titanium
just,
bits mixed in.
It's just a little shouldered washer. You
yeah.
know? And it's in the laminate. It's part of that piece.
Sure.
You know, and it's not aluminum, which would be cheaper and lighter.
Right.
But aluminum, you have the galvanic corrosion issue, and we want these bikes to last a long time.
From a nice tie perspective, I mean, nice road bike perspective, I get it. But, you know, if I'm trying to have some big lugs, I mean, lugs as in, like, a big chunk of metal.
How do you spell sintered?
S-I-N-T-E-R-D. T-E-R-E-D.
I'm trying to find
I'll that. Ask you about that later. How's
All
that?
Right. Yeah.
Anyway, so yeah, I got to move out of this rut of steel. I think I've pushed steel all the way, or I've pushed it to the reasonable limit. And to get more out of it than I am now, I'm kind of just wasting a lot of effort that I should be putting into another type of way of doing things.
Well, there's always, I mean, I've always been attracted to all materials and experimenting with materials.
Yes, and that's one of the reasons why I respect you so much. Very few builders build with all the materials, and you're one of them.
Yeah, and it's because every one of them is different, and you want to get to know it and understand it. And, sure. You know, the best way is to feel with it and experiment with it. You can learn so much about a material from just cutting it.
Right.
Whether you're running scissors through carbon fiber or a file through aluminum or anything, all those, you know, you get that tactile relationship with the material, and it tells you so much about the way it's going to behave when it's, you know, on duty.
Right.
Because that's what it's doing, is it's being felt and touched and moved and bent and, you know.
Sure. I was cutting some test tubes for, you know, connecting some joints, and just the way the, you know, there's a reason why I tend not to work with wood over metal or plastic, is because of that grain and how it just goes haywire if you're not really planning on it. And the carbon seems to have that kind of thing where it just wants to splinter off if you goof it up wrong.
Well, you have to cut it with the right tools in the right way, you know. And it's like welding titanium, there's rules. Everybody says welding titanium's hard. It's not. It's actually easier than welding steel. You just have to follow the rules. It's all process. It's not technique, you know. And with, I think with carbon fiber, it's the same. And once you familiarize yourself with those rules, then you don't run into those problems anymore. But using prepreg will make it a lot easier, because then you've got a matrix holding everything together and you're not dealing with fibers flying all over the place.
Believe me, my first trying to lay up that repair, I was like, this is crazy. It won't stay put. Right. And I look at the people doing prepreg, and it's like they put it where they want it, and it's done. And yeah. It's like, oh, that's so cool.
Yeah, and what does it cost? And there's tricks. Like, you'll heat a piece of material up, warm it a little so that it's tacky, and then you'll stick it on something like maybe around a radius, and it wants to go flat, right? So you make it warm, you stick it on your radius where you want it, and then you cool it off with Freon, and then it just stays in place.
So that way you do a heat gun and then Freon to lock it in place?
Yeah, and there's all sorts of little tricks like that. And, you know, once you, and with the, like that seat stay repair you did the other day, yeah. If you would have used a couple things of prepreg, wrap some shrink tape on it, hit it with a heat gun or with a, put it in an oven, it would have been smallest job ever.
Right. I mean, it was a really small job. I'm a rank novice, so I'm making all the little mistakes and I'm doing it all buffoonery.
Yeah, but well, you did a great job. It looked good, you know, and scarf joint, that's important. I think Bohm gave you really good advice when he said, go down through the laminate and identify each lamina, find out what the orientation of each one of those plies is, and then you want to build that scarf back up and out. That's your ideal repair. Now, in a seat stay, that's in compression already.
This is a cheap-ass bike, and it was for a girl that doesn't ride very aggressively.
Right, it's, and you wanted to, you it's know, a perfect place to learn, isn't it?
That's what started it off. Is like, I was like, I can't lose here, because if it screws up, screw it, throw it away.
Right,
you know?
Yeah.
Tell me about the Pursuit bikes and your involvement in that.
So Pursuit is a new brand that myself and my team, which includes Bill, who's a partner and product tester, lifelong, he's been in the bike industry since he's a little kid, and then our engineer Jared over there are doing. It's made in-house. We make them in Bozeman. It's a molded product, so it's made the same way most of the top-end bikes are, like an Argonaut or a Allied.
Are you doing aluminum molds?
Yeah. Yeah, 6061. We're real low production, so we don't even hard anodize our molds. We just cut them out of 6061.
So you're doing sort of an OCLV type of thing?
Yeah, or? It's a bladder molded, you know, so hollow.
But you're doing joints with straight sections?
We're doing basically three. There's seven pieces to the frame. Well, nine including the dropouts. And so one piece is the seat tube cluster and some of the top tube, and one piece is the bottom bracket and some of the seat tube, and the other piece is the head tube and some of the down tube. And
so then, say, how many different seat clusters do you have for the size range you're offering?
One for each size range.
So is that the one that changes, or all the other variables change too?
Yeah, everything changes except the seat stays. And the chain stays.
Okay, so you've got a lot of molds around.
So we have the dropout molds, there's one for every size. The bottom bracket C-tube and head tube molds, there's one for every size. And then there's left and right chain stay tools, and then there's one seat stay that goes on both sides.
Cool.
And it's a flat mount brake.
Cool. You're working with a bunch of, or two other people, like you just mentioned. Typically, till now, I believe you've just been a solo act. Your wife helps you in general. And this is a very, in my mind, a wise move from a builder like yourself to be doing in this market. What's really changed in your thinking coming, you know, you're trying to do your own brand and you're trying to do the Pursuit brand. What's changed your thinking also, not just the types of bikes you're making, like a molded carbon bike and in fixed sizes, but also working with two other people that are, you know, have their own professional opinions on the bike that compete with yours?
Well, we each have our roles, and so we really default to one another when it comes to each person's role in the business. And so obviously I'm an operations person as far as this business is concerned, or even administration really, and then engineering is handled by Jared and a lot of the operations with Bill. So, you know, my motive for doing this was to, like, continue to grow as a frame builder, learn more, understand more about processes, go into the future of what bikes are going to be. Bikes are moving toward more and more towards carbon fiber for the mainstream, and we wanted to be, you know, part of that evolution and maybe sort of get out on the front of the progress and help push it along and be out there learning, because we had a resource like Jared who's got a PhD in composites engineering, and he does some pretty cutting edge testing and analysis, so it was just a great resource and fit, and we knew him. He's got a long friendship with him. And so my goal is to pursue growing as a frame builder, but also I'm getting older and I need to kind of have a I need to.
For all you at home, Don as I get older, is making, you know, Don's making some faces.
I want to sort of, you know, have another role in the industry, and kind of as I get older and I don't see as well and I have more and more arthritis and building day in and day out, it gets harder and harder on me. I'd like to reduce the strong frames output to say one or two bikes a month, and grow Pursuit and be more of an administrative role at Pursuit. Rather than being, you know, at the bench. I mean, I've been doing it for 25 years now almost, and I'm 52. My eyesight's not getting any better. And as a TIG welder, you've really got to be able to see.
I think you're right on track myself, like my perspective of what you're doing and everything. One thing that it seems hard to see, there's very few, like, sage, experienced people around frame building right now. It seems like, while it's cool, there's a lot of young energy coming into things.
Oh yeah.
There's
a lot of talent too.
There's a lot of talent, but it's primarily from the constructionist point of view.
Yeah.
Or maybe aesthetics, but not the cold hard, this is a bicycle, it's got a job to do.
Right.
Type of thing.
You see a lot of that. The people missing the point.
Right.
That's
and that's just youth and inexperience. I was young myself. We all were.
That's why my bikes are boring. It's because they work. They're proven to work.
I know. My first show, walking by Strong stuff, it's like I knew you were good, but it was like, oh, those fucking boring bikes.
Yeah.
You know, but, you know, it took me a while to figure out that, you know, it's just boring bikes work. As long as they're well done.
Yeah, I mean, they've been around a long time, metal bikes, and to think that there's some kind of massive leap forward that you can make is foolish, you know. And I've never been a person to put aesthetic elements over performance. So when I see bikes where they've done this thing or that thing to differentiate the bike, make it look different, make it look pretty, those are the types of
curved tubes. I'm going to be talking to Skylar next.
Yeah. It's right there.
Oh, there we go.
Yeah.
He was giving some funny faces as he walked by. He knows he's coming up.
Yeah. But I'm all business. I like to ride bikes. I like bikes to perform for me. I've been riding bikes since I was a little bitty kid. I don't even remember the beginning of my bike riding career. I was too young to remember it.
Did you ever meet Lloyd Graves did Fat City and Independent?
Yeah.
Yeah. He, amazing, sort of that perspective of, you know, there wasn't a time he wasn't aggressively riding his bike.
Yeah, and it was same for motorcycles too. You know, I mean, I've just been on two wheels. I mean, and I'm not the greatest motorcycle or bike rider by any stretch of the imagination, but I'm really solid. I'm really experienced.
Sure. And I have that too. I'm pretty crummy when it comes to, like, performing with my body. I can fake it as I get older. It's harder and harder.
Yeah.
But there's something about experience and putting the thinking in behind it. Usually us slow guys are the guys that have to figure out how to make our shit faster.
Right.
Versus the fast guys, they can just fall back on that ass, so to speak. You know?
And I have a friend I go dirt biking with, and he's super fast. And so I've always tried to keep up with him. And he's just one of those naturally fast people. And if you ask him how he did it, he couldn't tell you.
Right.
Me, I had to learn how to do it.
Right.
I thought through everything. So now you ask me how to do something, I can tell you where the bike setup comes in. I can tell you the technique, how I weight myself, where the handlebars and foot pegs and everything are, because I had to think it all through. Then I had to store it into my subconscious so it didn't interfere with me anymore. So the learning curve would be really, really, really flat. because you're thinking too much.
Right. Oh, totally.
And then finally, you've stopped thinking, and you know, you shoot up.
Yeah, I've done a lot of work with bike geometry, as you know, in the past few years.
Yeah.
And, you know, the thinking about it and making it happen and trying to break down everything that's happening and what's going to make a difference. You know, if you're fast, you don't have to do that.
Yeah.
And but we all have our place. I think it's tricky when fast guys discredit slower guys that are tinkering.
Right.
When we're being productive.
Yeah.
There's unproductive tinkerers too.
There is. But I've known people that spend so much time working on their stuff they never even ride it.
Right. Right. You know? But I'm talking also you making progress with your tinkering. Like
yeah.
It's moving what your bike or whatever you're doing forward.
Yeah.
And you're getting somewhere. And then using that knowledge, it's like one of my favorite things to do lately in general is take a pro's bike or a fast guy's rider that's close to me and help them out and say, yeah, this is what we're going to do and it's going to make you faster.
Well, a couple years ago, I built myself a new mountain bike, and it was the first mountain bike I did with a short stem, wide handlebars, long top tube. So I'm going riding with my buddy, Eric from Alliance Cycles, and I'm hating the bike. I swapped bikes with him because he's been riding bikes like that forever. Fixed my suspension settings for me, and then I got back on it. He said, get out over the handlebars, yeah, you know, put your chin over the handlebars.
That's a tough thing, like with young riders around me, you know, because I'm in Marin, we got a strong high school league, and we got killer trails, and youth that know, and they have the money and resources to go to races and get the bikes and all that stuff. They learn how to ride these sick trails, and they're shredding. They're sick enduro riders, and they're young and strong. The thing is that I can sometimes keep up with younger ones that haven't gotten full man strength and stuff like that.
Yeah.
But the thing is that they're learning all the lessons correctly.
Yeah.
Versus when we were young, we had to learn to do it the wrong way.
Yeah.
And we're spending most of our riding now unlearning all the bullshit that we learned back in the day when we were riding road bikes with fat tires.
I agree. The one advantage that we do have that is people that have learned to ride aggressively on non-suspended bikes, I think, are definitely smoother than people that learned on full suspension bikes.
It's a different thing.
Yeah.
And if you're racing, it's the clock that will tell you. And I'm pretty sure the fastest guys are on ride the full suspension bikes. Like
no,
I'm
not saying that, but I'm saying that when there was no full suspension bike and you had to learn to be smooth and fast.
Oh, sure.
Because every little bump was slowing you down, right? You know, anything that scrubs speed at all, you learn how to get rid of it. You know, stay off the ground. The ground slows you down, you know?
It's weird, you know, because I ride mostly hardtail,
mm-hmm,
but I've got a gigantic enduro bike, you know, things like 180 millimeters up front, 170 in the back.
Yeah.
It's a monster. And I've had a bunch of full suspension bikes and all that. And it's just, it's a very different thing. And they both inform each other.
Yeah.
And what's great is when you go back and forth. And you
yeah.
go from like hardtail to full suspension and back and forth. And it really helps you ride both better.
And you know what else I learned to help me a lot is proper trail riding on a motorcycle.
Oh, God, yeah.
Not enduro not enduro riding, but real, same trails you'd ride your mountain
sure.
bike on. Ride them on a real lightweight, fast dirt bike.
Absolutely.
And the weight transfer is so important on a motorcycle, and you can put it on either tire at will. Like on a bike, you can't, you know.
Right.
You can move it to the back tire, but you can't slam it on the back tire. And it really makes you think about the balance
sure.
and which tire is doing what and when and by how much, which goes back to that point I was making about going to the short stem, wide bar, long top tube. Is I wasn't putting enough weight on the front tire.
Sure.
The minute I got the weight on the front tire, and it just felt odd because I was like, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
It makes you have to ride them aggressively. You can't halfway ride
them.
Well,
you've seen my bikes where it's like, you know, I'm so over the front. My bike setup right now, it's like I'm old and my arms have, you know, blood circulation issues and stuff like that. But if I'm on that bike for more than 3 hours, I'm hurting because
yeah.
I'm so on the front. But if I'm charging up or down the hill, that is the fastest thing out there. It's
yeah.
crazy and how fast you can go when you get some weight over the front.
And I can see that. And, you know, with a motorcycle, you do all the weight distribution. You do it all with the throttle and the brakes. And you don't have to get out as much. you're pinching the motorcycle with your knees, and you're using your core to support yourself versus your arms. And so that's a whole different thing. So once I got out over the front wheel, and then I found where I could get both the wheels to kind of tires to kind of slide together at the same time, and I figured out, okay, this is where I need to be on the bike to make that happen. Yeah. I'm not pushing one, not oversteering.
Like the actual proper balance point on a bike while cornering.
Yeah, and once I kind of found that, it seemed like it was a lot broader, like I had a bigger range. It wasn't like this perfect little spot. It was a bigger spot.
You know, it's funny, when coming back to what I was saying earlier about learning to ride on the proper stuff. You know, we grew up riding high post on mountain bikes and stuff like that. And thinking about riding now and my current geometry and how I ride now, my ass is over my saddle when I ride trail now, not behind my saddle.
Yeah.
And that's the real shift, I think, in understanding what's going on with modern mountain bikes or even aggressive gravel bikes. Your ass is over the saddle, not behind it. And the reason is because we now have droppers and it's not in the way. So now your ass can actually be there.
And that's another interesting thing is when you have a dropper and you put your saddle down, you don't have the reference point anymore.
And that, well, you're using different ones.
Yeah, but the one that you've been riding with for 20 years is like, where am I on this thing? You know, but what happens is you start to feel the bike and you're not resorting to this seat. You know, where's the seat? That, you know, and that's kind of informing of you where you are on the bike. Instead, you're actually feeling the tires and letting them inform you where you are.
And you're properly standing on your pedals versus dodging your saddle.
Yeah, for sure.
Okay, Carl, I really appreciate the time you've given me. I'm going to go bust. It's Adam Schuyler, right?
Sklar. Adam Sklar.
Okay.
S-K-L-A-R.
I'm going to do the Montana contingent first because he kind of represents the youth, and he's got his, like we were saying, his aesthetics and all the things that he's
known for.
Yeah. He does it well. I think he does it well. It's just he's definitely the younger guy.
Oh, he is. He's 23 years old, I think.
Okay. So, thank you so much.
Yeah, you bet, Peter. Have a good one.